You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, PMH Atwater returns for our second show. PMH is one of the original researchers in the field of near-death studies, having begun her work in 1978. She has written 10 books on her findings and is now working on the 11th. Her 10th book is titled Near-Death Experiences, The Rest of the Story, which expands theories about the brain and spirit shift, straight talk about transformations of consciousness, and the future of the human race. Her work spans over 3 decades of scientific research with thousands of adults and children, and another decade of consciousness research. This is the second of a 2-part show called The Great Shifting 2012 and Beyond. So let's welcome her back to the show now. Hi, PMH. How are you?
Hi. You know, it's really fun to be back.
Oh, wonderful.
It's also kind of scary.
Well, me too. Me too. That makes two of us.
Well, it's kind of scary because this is an experiment. And I hope everybody remembers that from our last show. Mm-hmm. And if we've got any newcomers out there, then let me just sort of quickly give you a word picture here. This is
wonderful.
An experiment where we are going through a chart, a large, huge chart I made, plus some notes that backed up the material I presented at a workshop. And the workshop took 3 to 4 hours, depending on what city it was held in. And so we just thought, you and I, just for fun, that we would take some of the gems from this workshop and these charts, and we would share them with the radio audience. And I've never done anything like this before in my life. And I doubt if you've done anything like this before either.
No, I haven't. This is totally new and in the now, and it's live, so.
Yeah, I mean, this is just absolutely brand new. Yeah, this is fun. We've never done anything like this before.
It is fun.
Let me create another little word picture. I've got this huge chart sort of balanced across my countertops in my kitchen where they make kind of an L. And so it goes across that corner space. And then I've got it propped up with a chair.
Okay.
So, I've got all these papers and then this rickety chart and chair. And I'm turning pages in the chart as I go along. And it's just really very comical.
But besides
the comedy, I just want to briefly review what we covered last week. And what we covered was sort of setting the record straight about what's happening now in our world and all the prediction and all the prophecy and all the kind of ideas and wonderings and the different psychics and the different mediums and all these different folk and our scientists who come up with all these ideas about, number one, the Mayan calendar, number two, what's going on in our world, number three, all these huge cycles that are all coming to a peak now. So I want the audience to realize this is not just a Mayan calendar thing. It is a culmination, a peaking of lots and lots and lots of cycles. A 300,000-year cycle is peaking now. A 25,920-year cycle is peaking now. One that is about 11,500 to 600-year cycle. I mean, you can just count them all down, even to our smaller, but quite significant solar flares and different kinds of cycles for our sun.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a time of real upheaval. And as you can imagine, with all these kinds of cycles peaking, there's going to be a lot of scary, crazy stuff going on in the world.
Yes.
And all you have to do is look out your window,
right
down the street,
yep.
or read your latest newspaper, and there's the proof of everything I just said.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
You know, it's just all around us, and it does not all have to be scary. There's so many positive things happening.
Yes, and one of the things that you brought up, several things were really important, had to do with the fact that this is a consciousness shift, that the calendar is really about consciousness, and it's not a linear calendar, and that there's also been a discovery that you mentioned about new Mayan findings, a site that takes the future. The scientists are absolutely stunned to see that the new calculations that have been sitting there waiting for them to discover indicate that the calendar goes on for thousands or ten thousands or even trillions of years into the future.
Absolutely. They have found the rest of the Mayan calendar.
Right.
So the only thing that ends on December 21 this year is the sunstone. That's the only, that carved, you know, great big huge stone that outlines the five worlds that the Mayans understood.
Right.
Actually, it outlined four of them in depth and then just sort of teases us and indicates the fifth world. It doesn't go beyond that. Well, the only thing that ends is that sunstone. The calendar itself doesn't end because in May of this year, they announced this great big announcement that they found this room full of calculations extending the calendar from now up to, you know, like trillions, not billions of years into the future.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, there's a date 8,000 years from today or from now, from this year, 8,000 years into the future, that seems to be set out or somehow emphasized in the rest of the Maya calendar. So we've all, you know, we're all playing this game of what on earth were these astronomer priests trying to tell us about 8,000 years from now?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, we're still just trying to deal with December 21.
Right. And one of the wonderful things that you brought to our attention was also that this is not just the Earth shifting. It's the solar system and the galaxy. All of the planets are...
Everything.
Everything is shifting.
Everything is shifting.
It's a galactic or supergalactic shift, which also is tied into our location in the Great Rift.
Right. You know, everything is heating up and speeding up.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's one thing I want to emphasize again. All of the galaxies, not just ours, are speeding up, heating up, and streaking across the universe like frisbees.
I wonder who's throwing them.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I don't know either.
You know, I've seen real time films of this, and this is no joke. They really are streaking across the universe like frisbees. It's just like zoom zoom.
Right.
Something is attracting the galaxies to speed towards it. And
you mentioned the great attractor. Yeah.
It's called the great attractor.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely unknown. Nobody knows what the great attractor is. So this is one of the great mysteries we may or may not solve in our lifetimes, but it's one of those kind of spooky, you know,
spooky action
things.
Distance. Yeah.
What is the great attractor? Well, last week we really kind of set the stage for this business of cycles. All cycles spiral. They don't go in circles. They spiral. And before and as you go up the spiral, each upward rise has a dip. There's always that dip before the thrust to the next level of the spiral.
Mm-hmm.
And what sort of directs the action and the activity and the energy of that thrust is consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all of us here on good old planet Earth and everywhere else, who knows?
Right.
It's our consciousness that's going to direct that next upward thrust. Where do we want to go? How do we want to do it? What kind of people do we want to be? What kind of world do we want to live in? It's up to us what we're doing right now and the choices we're making. So I want to read very quickly some words attributed to Edgar Cayce. People aren't really sure that he made them, but they're attributed to him. There were predictions made in the 1940s, and this is claimed by Henry Reed, who writes in the Venture Inward magazine of the Association for Research and Enlightenment. This is the Edgar Cayce Group, ARE, in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And these predictions made by Edgar Cayce, supposedly in the 1940s, a new form of medicine will emerge, a kind of transformational healing rooted in holism and dealing with the body as an energy system.
Mm-hmm.
The continuity of life will be fully accepted as an indisputable fact.
Mm-hmm.
Science and spirituality will cease to be antagonists.
Mm-hmm.
A kind of social leveling will come to pass on a worldwide scale.
Mm.
Dramatic geographical changes will take place, including very significant changes in weather patterns. We're certainly seeing that now.
Mm-hmm.
Leadership on the international scene will move to the Orient, even to Central China. We're starting to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Archaeological discoveries about ancient civilizations will radically alter our sense of human history. Intuition and psychic abilities will become the norm.
Mm-hmm.
Individuals will have a personal and direct connection with the spiritual world in ways that allow that connection to be applied in a practical manner in daily life.
Mm-hmm.
The principle of oneness will become paramount in human affairs. The oneness of God will guide all religious traditions. The oneness of energy will guide science, and the oneness of all humanity will direct politics.
Mm.
And then he goes on to say, Christ will reappear directly in earthly life.
Mm.
So he's predicting the second coming.
Does he specify that? That Christ energy or the office of Christ meaning?
Well,
he's
talking about the physical man, Jesus, but he's also talking about the Christ consciousness, which is what we can all attain, especially if we use the life of Jesus or the teachings of Jesus as a model.
Mm-hmm.
We can use that to model our own choices, what we do, you know, this kind of thing.
Yes.
But I find that last prediction, it's a tenth one, Christ will reappear directly in earthly life. It's sort of very similar to Islam, where they're predicting the return of the missing imam, or
that's right.
Imam.
That's right.
And it's the same idea of a Christ figure.
Right.
So,
And the Mayans have Quetzalcoatl and
yeah.
Yes.
So there's a lot of different traditions that are expecting their main leader, translator,
right,
prophet to return in some capacity. Mm. So there's a lot of them expecting that.
Yeah.
And Edgar Cayce also gave more energy to that type of prediction and that type of reality.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got all this coming, you know, and I'm also captured by the fact that he said that archaeological discoveries about ancient civilizations will radically alter our sense of human history. You know, that discovery that they've made now, I believe it was in southwestern Turkey, of the Göbekli Tepe. You know, that was an advanced civilization. And it dates, the carbon dating on it or the scientific dating on it is 11,500 years ago, maybe even longer than that, but about 11,500 years ago. This was a city. It was a complete city. It was a group of people, a civilization that had their temples. They had the division of labor. They had advanced artwork and all different kinds of artwork and carving. They had advanced husbandry. They were raising crops in fields. They knew about preserving food. All these kinds of things that we attribute to what should I say? Like maybe Europe and you know the times of China and Europe and you know many thousands of years later. Göbekli Tepe had all of that and more. In fact, they were a very advanced society 7,000 years before the Paleo. What is it? The Paleo. Anyway, the breakout from the Neolithic times. Way thousands of years before Stonehenge. I mean, this discovery absolutely upsets everything we know or think we know
right.
about the human being, about human societies, about the human family, about human history, about human accomplishment, about human advancement. It upsets every single thing we ever learn in school or that we've ever been taught or that science still speaks of.
Yes.
It turns everything we think we know about ourselves, and it turns it all upside down.
And
so,
that's needed, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, we got it.
It's necessary.
Needed or not, it's like a huge slap in the face for science as we know it. You know, it's like,
right.
Wait a minute, guys.
Right.
What you've been telling us isn't true. So let's get in now a little closer in time to sort of what's going on or what could be going on. Let's just kind of pretend that it's October 31st,
okay,
which is Halloween.
Oh, right.
And we're going to deal with some scaries.
Okay.
So, you know, before we were just sort of laying the groundwork for these major cycles. Now let's take a look at what could happen, what is set up and very possibly could be triggered. So let's start looking at some of the things that could happen during this massive change period we're in, because this kind of change really fosters massive change on a huge level. So let's take a look at weather changes.
Okay.
We're already seeing that. We're seeing weather wars and this HARP facility in Alaska. That's where those huge towers are. Let's see. HARP antennas stand 65 feet high and are spaced 80 feet apart in 8 columns by 6 rows. So if you can imagine these large antennas, they're literally antennas that are not only these big posts all set up in this square or section of land, but at the very tops of them, it's sort of like a spider web of wiring that goes from post to post to post.
Mm-hmm.
And the HAARP facility, H-A-A-R-P, the HAARP facility in Alaska, was supposedly set up to protect our country from weather extremes and to help alter the magnetics. But, you know, a lot of people think, this is not what it's for.
Right.
That it's a military installation, so
yeah.
Therefore has something to do with wars or invasions or maybe actually causing weather extremes in
yes.
different parts of the country. So we have all these conspiracies about, you know, what the HAARP facility is, but it's there.
Right.
Our planet is definitely getting warmer. There's more CO2 in the air. And let's take a look at what it means for our planet to be getting warmer, because we're already seeing that, especially where I live in Virginia and up and down the East Coast, you know, lots and lots of reports now of West Nile virus. We've never had them before, or
mm-hmm.
hardly any,
mm-hmm.
now just in the last few months. They're everywhere. They're even starting to put down horses now that are getting the West Nile virus. So this is very serious. As our planet gets warmer, it is very true that we will see the greening of the planet Earth. You know, plants love CO2 in the air. They love a warmer, more moist climate, or even a dry, as long as it's warmer and there's more CO2 in the air. They love that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hey, look at us, we the people. When this happens, this is very good for plants, insects, and microbes that make us sick.
Okay.
We're going to see more pollen. We're going to see it earlier in the year, because plants are going to grow faster. They're going to, you know, earlier in the year, they're going to come out. I can tell you right now where we live, all of my flowers, all of my trees here are a month and a half earlier than they have ever been. In their blooming and, you know, everything else. Everything is happening a month and a half earlier than it would normally do. We get increased, here's a good one, and it's already happening, an increased growth rate of poison ivy.
Mm.
But the surprising thing is poison ivy will not just become more abundant, it will be more toxic.
Oh, okay.
So this idea of insects and all these different kinds of, you know, West Nile virus, malaria is now coming into the United States in a much larger numbers, and Dengue fever. They're now starting to report Dengue fever coming into Texas. Never been in our hemisphere. Never have we had Dengue fever. Dengue fever is kind of a blood brain disease. It is really frightening. It kills very, very quickly. It's an awful thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's now coming in. More and more mosquitoes coming in with yellow fever. Toxic molds and fungi produce more spores.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're talking about a greener planet, we're also talking about a planet that could make us very ill unless we become used to this or somehow adjust to this. And certainly in the early days and months and years, it could be difficult for people, especially if you have hay fever,
mm-hmm.
Especially if you're sort of sensitive right now. The various types of pollens. Just wait. This is going to get bigger and bigger, become more important. The sunspots, and the 11-year sunspots, of course, those are picking up. Sun flares are picking up. Here's one thing that I bet most people didn't know, and it's just kind of, I think, kind of a fabulous kind of thing. Your so-called master numbers in numerology, the idea of the 11s, the 22s, the 33s, the so-called applied science of the ancients, where they use these master numbers, all these numbers are based on sunspot cycles. And so is all of the Eleusinian mysteries. It all comes from and is based on sunspot cycles. So when we're talking about this kind of thing, we're talking about something that has guided and led and influenced humans for a long time, even our spiritual traditions and our religions. And, you know, NASA is so concerned about sun flares, solar flares, that they sent up earlier this year, in February of this year, an $860 million sophisticated probe just to watch for sun activity. It normally takes 3 to 4 days for a sun flare to hit us. But in 1859, it only took a little over 17 hours. And this is what concerns them. You know, a lot of our scientists call it the Carrington event, because Richard Carrington made the earliest observations of this sun flare, the big one that hit in 1859. Mm-hmm. You know, your sun flares, if you get the big ones, they will cause spectacular aurora borealis displays. Did you see the one just a couple of nights ago?
No,
I
didn't.
Wow. Did you see pictures of that thing?
No, I didn't see that either.
Oh, my goodness. It was so huge and so beautiful and so powerful. It literally took your breath away. We saw a picture of it on CNN and also NBC News, which had pictures of it. It was just breathtaking. And we've had several of these huge displays now this year. We very seldom get them this big or this powerful, and certainly not this many in 1 year. But when you've got a lot of solar flare activity, that's when you get these big aurora borealis. So we're already getting them. So back in 1859, they got one of these big spectacular ones. It was so brilliant, though, that across the Rocky Mountains, gold miners, assuming that morning had come, awoke to prepare breakfast while crowing roosters imagined that dawn was breaking.
Wow.
It was that bright. Can you imagine that?
That's
and
amazing.
Then, you know, followed by, you know, slap it to you, the sun flare hit. Now, bear in mind, that was only 1859.
Wow.
And still, let's see, telegraph instruments caught fire. A flame from a switchboard ignited the entire building, burned it down.
Mm-hmm.
In Sweden, a telephone station was burned out. The solar flares interfered with telephone, telegraph, and cable traffic over most of Europe, also hit in the United States. So stop and think, you know, if it's going to be erupting and burning out telephone and telegraph wires in 1859, what would it do in 2012?
Well, yes, and with satellites being knocked out,
yeah,
and the electrical grid, and, you know, so there are enormous implications, if you don't even take into consideration the communication from the sun to the earth, which is connected to volcanoes and various other severe weather events. So
yeah,
you know,
all of us are
so reliant on computers and cell phones and communications. And should all of those go down sporadically or suddenly, that would be a disturbance in the force.
A big one.
Yes.
You know, and we're still being reassured over television and, you know, various type of news outlets.
Well, of course.
That you know, it takes about 3 to 4 days before we're hit by one of these. But remember, in 1859, it only took a little over 17 hours.
That's right. That's
so
right.
So we can get hit by a clipper.
Yes.
That really zooms in and zooms in really large and really fast.
That's right.
And I want to sort of hopscotch here across some dates, some kind of things that that certainly could be happening, and then I want to talk about some of the ways that maybe we're set up already for what could be some huge changes, some even scary ones.
Okay.
So, again, we'll kind of pretend here like it's October 31, and we're talking in terms of now how the Earth right now stands as per what could happen with a lot of activity, and we're certainly getting a lot of activity. Some people will talk about a magnetic pole shift, maybe a full we could have a geophysical pole shift,
mm-hmm.
or we could have even a geomagnetic pole shift. The geophysical is a lot easier. The magnetic one could be a little hard on us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had them before. They seem to be cyclic as well. We have them again. It doesn't mean that the whole world is going to flip over and, you know, all of the oceans are going to splash all over everybody.
Right.
Because we've had these kind of things before.
Right.
But they still could be really difficult in the sense of geomagnetics, because invariably, with these big shifts, we get a new pole star. Well, when you get a new pole star, that's going to throw off your maps. It's going to throw off your planes, your airplanes, your various kind of travel systems, because, you know, we're not going to be able to go by what we once did. So it's going to throw that into disarray. Let me just quickly throw in here some of these biggies. The Great Conveyor Belt, you know, the largest river in the world, is located inside of the Atlantic Ocean.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There is a river located inside of the Atlantic Ocean. And that river, it's called the Conveyor Belt, the Great Conveyor Belt, brings up the warmth from the tropical area of our planet up to the more northern reaches of our planet, like Norway and Greenland and on up there. And it works, it revolves just like a conveyor belt. And what keeps it moving, what moves this conveyor belt, is salt. So if we've got enough salt in the water, if we've got enough salt in the ocean, that conveyor belt will keep moving, and Europe will have four seasons, will have four seasons, so will at least part of Canada.
Mm.
Well, if we've got a lot of fresh water dumping into the ocean, that conveyor belt begins to lose its salt, and it begins to slow down. Now, this, too, has happened before in history, where it's almost stopped, and when it really did stop, when it really does stop, that's when we get an ice age.
Uh-huh. And that can be very sudden.
Right. And right now, today, the Great Conveyor Belt has lost over half of its salt. so it slowed down. So we're starting to get weather extremes in Europe, in Canada, and in the United States. We're not to an ice age, but we're starting to get some real kind of scary things happening with that great conveyor belt having to slow down, and it's slowing down more and more and more. You know, as the ice melts, more and more fresh water goes into the ocean.
Methane gas is released also.
Yeah, it's releasing more and more methane gas as the air heats up, as the planet warms up, then we've got more and more methane gas being released, sometimes in bursts or explosions that causes loss of life or fires. That's happening all over the world in places where it is. Methane gas is usually held in peat moss or something like that, so it's usually the northern climes that has it, but it's been popping up all over. And of course, you know, in modern times, modern meaning still a long time ago, but basically modern times, we had that meteorite hit Russia, and it turned a huge forest into toothpicks. Yeah, that's, what was that, was that the late 1800s, early 1900s? I think it was in the early 1900s when that happened. I don't remember the actual date. In the Azores and the Canary Islands, there's a large volcanic ridge about to fall. It seems to be tipping more and more closer to falling into the ocean. About 2 to 3 feet each year. It's just tipping more and more. If that ridge would fall into the ocean, it would create a tsunami so huge that it would destroy most of the United States East Coast. That's how big that ridge is in the Azores.
Huh. Interesting.
Already the oceans have risen over 4 inches, in some places even more. And another interesting physiological thing that exists right now, of course, we all know about Krakatoa. And
right.
I hope everybody remembers the volcano Krakatoa that blew its top. When was that, 18-something? I don't have the date down here, but it was in, I believe, the late 1800s.
When it wasn't at the same time as the solar flare, was it?
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
No, that was a volcanic eruption. Krakatoa was not a normal volcano. Krakatoa was what they call a super volcano. There are only three of them on our planet. That's
1883.
Okay. It created a year without a summer. Crop failures all over the planet. Huge, unusual lights in the sky. It just really turned everything cold. It did incredible damage. But one of the interesting things that that happened from that that our historians tell us about is that there were. That was a Muslim country, and it's still basically that area is Muslim. And the British were primarily in charge of the area, or in somehow governance was held or protection was held by the British, and the British didn't pay any attention or very little attention to the Muslim people who were dying, who were hurt, their villages destroyed, they were scared out of their skin, that they absolutely needed help, water, food, medical assistance, and the Brits turned their back on them. And because of that, that's when we had the first major breakout of Muslim terrorism.
Huh, that's interesting.
Isn't that interesting? It all goes back to Krakatoa. And I'm talking here major terrorism breakouts.
I didn't know that.
From Muslims.
Wow.
And it was because of Krakatoa and the fact that the Brits would not help the Muslims who were asking for help. They basically ignored them or did very little.
Wow.
And that can be traced back to Krakatoa.
Very interesting.
Created a year without a summer, ash falls, crop failures worldwide. You know, it just scared the wits out of a lot of people. But the interesting thing is, you ready for this?
Okay, I'm
Anak Krakatoa is now growing from the old one.
Mama had a baby. Oh, boy.
Krakatoa had a baby.
Oh, great.
We now have another super volcano growing to a little bit to one side of Mama.
Oh.
And, you know,
this
whole scenario could be recreated, who knows, but we've got another one growing from the remains of the old one. So Anak Krakatoa is on its way to, you know, maybe someday achieving the fame of the mother. Now I said we had three of them, you know, and Krakatoa was one.
Okay.
So there's two more.
Oh, okay.
There's another one in southern Italy, right underneath Naples.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
Major tourist center?
Wow.
There's the
second
one. Well,
people don't plan these things out when they, you know, start a city.
Yeah, the second one is in southern Italy.
Yeah.
And it's overdue for an eruption.
Nice. How about Yellowstone?
The biggest of the super volcanoes.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
The biggest of the super volcanoes is in Yellowstone Park.
Yes, that one. And
I think you know about that, the one in Yellowstone Park. It's the biggest of the three.
Yeah.
It's 40,000 years overdue for an eruption.
Wow.
If it erupts,
wow,
it will destroy two-thirds of the United States.
Wow.
And poison water supplies worldwide.
Wow.
It is that big.
Well.
So, you know, if we want to think of scaries. all the old calendars are based on catastrophe.
Our
forebears understood that catastrophe is what primes the evolutionary pump, that these were necessary. So when they talked about their various worlds or realities or major phases ending, they would always end with a catastrophe of some kind because they understood that this was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So we certainly have the possibility for a lot of that, maybe wars, you know, all this kind of stuff. Let me just kind of go over some dates here that I think your people might find of interest. Are we ready for the dates now? Yeah, we are. Okay. First date, 1840. You didn't think I'd go back that far, did you?
No.
This date is significant because it's the birth of the New Thought movement.
Huh.
Now we're not talking New Age here.
All right.
We're talking New Thought. The New Thought movement is eventually produced people like Mary Baker Eddy and Ernest Holmes and Charles and Myrtle Fillmore. The idea of holistic development, body, mind, spirit, that is called New Thought, and the New Thought movement began in the 1840s. Now, it's very similar, if not identical, to the writings of Plato.
So it's
really not New Thought, it's Old Thought, if you're going to be very honest about that.
Right.
But that New Thought movement that began in the 1840s will culminate in 2024.
Oh, okay, now how do you
right
know
ahead
this?
Of us? The 1840s.
Is that per the astrology?
It's a lot of predictions, a lot
okay.
of feelings and thoughts. It's per movements and energy and what's
okay.
going on and the way the different cycles kind of move and perpetuate and the way they branch out. And so it's predicted that what began in 1840 will culminate in 2024. And what's really interesting about 2024, 2025, that's when we get the first of the real Aquarian children moving into the world.
Ah, yes.
So, you
right,
know,
right.
forget about New Age.
Right.
New Age was never any more than a fluke, really.
Right.
If you're going to talk about something with real...
deep?
yeah, really deep influence and results.
Complete and, paradigm and, shifting move.
Yeah, you're talking
yes.
new thought.
Yes.
And that idea of body, mind, spirit. That's
yes.
not a New Age concept. That's
no.
a new thought concept.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so it began in 1840. It's said to culminate in 2024. A 184-year phase of spiritual discovery and holistic development. Then 2006, and of course that's a little while ago, Mars went retrograde in the U.S. chart for the first time in our country's history. Went retrograde. That when that happens, then, when that happened, it'll be retrograde for 70 years, doesn't come out again until July of 2076.
Wow.
It's when we have a tendency to project our own aggressive tendencies on other people, other nations, other worlds. We could we lose our energy, our power, and our influence. The United States then begins to move down a rung or two on the ladder.
We can see
it's
that
it's not
happening.
As influential as it once was.
Right, right.
We could eventually become the wounded healer in the world stage if we are able to repair and heal our own problems.
Right.
U.S. energy, power, and influence wanes. We're off stride. Again, it's a 70-year time frame. So it doesn't matter who you vote for, whether
right.
you vote for Obama or, you know, Romney. It doesn't matter. Neither one of them are going to bring back the United States to full power and glory.
Right.
It isn't going to happen because our energy has dipped, and it's going to stay down. In fact, it might dip even further as the years go by. And it's, you know, if we wake up and look at this and realize what's happening and why, not just astrologically, but what's happening to us, how we have lost our leadership in the world, if we start really looking at that and start making corrections, then we can start bringing ourselves back, healing ourselves, and then helping to heal others.
Mm-hmm.
2009 to 2023, we have Pluto in the sign of Capricorn. This is the old world order. It's a time of practicality. The three R's: reduce, reuse, recycle. The shift of wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Rethink growth. Corrupt politicians. Corrupt imperialism. Global contraction.
Mm-hmm.
Return to the fundamentals. Wealth excesses. A class war, food and water scares. These
mm-hmm.
are typical things that happen with Pluto and Capricorn. And again, Pluto doesn't slip into Capricorn very often.
Mm.
Nobody has seen anything like this before in their lifetime. It doesn't happen very often. And especially now at the same time that Uranus is in Aries, 2010 to 2019, almost the same dates, Uranus is in Aries. Uranus is sort of like the heavenly spotlight that shines down on anything that needs correcting or looking at again, redefining, where we have to get honest. The social cycles. Uranus stays in any one sign about 7 years. So these are our social cycles. And right now it's 7 to 8 years. Right now it's courage, decision time as we head toward what could be our third industrial revolution or a debt crisis. Is Arab Spring headed toward Arab Fall? Life, death, challenges, authority, conflicts, rise in shootings, daring, innovation, climate changes. You always have climate changes whenever you have Uranus and Aries. And that happens a little more frequently. But when you get Uranus and Aries, what they call square or fighting with or not cooperating that well with Pluto and Capricorn, you know, these are signs that don't get along well. It takes a lot more for Capricorn to get along with Aries. They tend to butt heads. So Pluto is the planet of transformation. Death of the old, birth of the new. Capricorn is the old, Aries is the new. And Pluto says change, and Aries says how high, how much. So, you know.
Okay. All right.
So we've got this real battle between the old and the new, and it's going to last until almost 2023, maybe afterward. So the times that are more critical, the months that will be more critical during this time frame, and everybody wants to get their pens on paper here, the big ones are over for 2012 as we move into 2013. It's the month of May and the month of November. In 2014, it's the month of April and the month of December. And then in 2015, just the month of March.
Okay.
These are times of meltdown. All of this. Pluto and Capricorn, Uranus and Aries, times of meltdown, collapse of major institutions. It's very comparable to what set up the American Revolution in 1755 to 1758, and the Columbus Europeans colonizing the Western Hemisphere in 1493 to the 1500s. It's depression or rebirth. Yeah, we go one way or we go the other. So we're in a time of massive change. And again, all you have to do is just, you know, kind of pull out your newspaper and there it is.
Right.
Or, you know, turn on to CNN or Fox.
Right.
Doesn't matter. It depends on your point of view, and then you're going to get it.
You're right.
On a positive note here, I'd like to share a couple of really helpful thoughts that can help us not only get through this time frame, because it's a very challenging time, or at least help us to understand it better. If we want to understand it better, I think the best source is The Lord of the Rings by J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yes.
You know, The Lord of the Rings is written about or covers that time frame between the Third World and the Fourth World, the time when the elves are leaving and the Hidden Order is beginning to leave.
Yes.
And the Fourth World, the time of man, where the humans are now taking over.
Yes.
So now we're going from the time of man, the fourth world, to the fifth world, which is a time of science and great, great, wonderful revolutions that can occur in this world that can really turn this world into something very much better if we don't blow it up first. So it's that idea of that shift period.
Mm-hmm.
So the Lord of the Rings covered that huge shift between the third world and the fourth world. Now we're in a huge shift between the fourth world and the fifth world. And
right.
I write about this a lot in detail in my book, Children of the Fifth World, that comes out this December. And by the way, you can pre-order it. Okay, here's the understanding that Tolkien gave us that can work now, just like it did in the series The Lord of the Rings. And here's the elements to look for. The common man and woman are the heroes. Take glory in ordinary events. Each age requires a hero to take a stand with an issue. So that's a common man and woman.
Mm-hmm.
We now have an issue.
Mm-hmm.
We persevere even in the midst of hardships. All races unite and work together.
Mm-hmm.
We all have the courage to travel back to the source, which
mm-hmm.
is God or Allah or divine guide, whatever you want to call that. I still call it God. It is time to undo everything that went astray.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to this. Good always triumphs over evil because evil always serves the good. No one advances unscathed, not even the innocent. Through willpower and decisiveness, we rediscover what we already know. Now, that's what Tolkien taught us.
Wow.
That's what he showed us.
Wow.
In that series, The Lord of the Rings.
That is a beautiful, beautiful.
That's just powerful stuff.
It is, and it's almost the perfect place for us to create our marker for tonight's show to leave us all on a higher plane. Since we're just about out of time, we have a few minutes
left. Do we have
left.
Just a couple of minutes left?
Yes.
This is the time now of the spiritual warrior. Remember, Aries is a sign of war and warriors and all this kind of stuff. Well, it's the time of the spiritual warrior. Remember, we're all heroes.
Mm-hmm.
What's a spiritual warrior? They use spiritual discipline. They use their MAP, M-A-P, M, meditation, A, affirmations, P, prayer. MAP, M-A-P, meditation, affirmations, prayer. They are heart-centered, clear-headed. They know the real issues. They protect self by using truth. Truth is your sword. They are wide awake. They are committed. They are focused. This is not the peace movement. This is not the war movement. This is the wisdom movement.
Wow. Wow. That is truly awesome.
And let's remember that, because when we come back to talk again, when is that? November 10? When we meet again, yeah, November 10.
Yes.
That's when we can begin to talk about the fifth world and the fifth root race. And if nobody knows what a root race is, they get to find out November 10.
Wonderful. Well, Team H, I want to thank you again for another wonderful show. And would you let people know where they can find your website so that they can subscribe to your free newsletter and find your book?
Okay, it's www.pmhatwater.com. That's all lowercase, one word, P as in Paul, M as in Mary, H as in Howard. So
okay.
It's pmhatwater.com. You can get the book at any bookstore. You can advance order it through Barnes & Noble and Inner Traditions and PAL Incorporated, or I think it's just called PAL. P-O-W-E-L-L. There's a number of different places where you can advance order, but I think most people are familiar with Amazon.com.
Yes.
Also, Inner Traditions. They're basically the publisher of the book, even though it says Bear & Company. Bear & Company is an imprint, of inner tradition.
Well, PMH, we're going to sign off now, and I just want to thank you again for bringing all of this wonderful information to us. And I look forward to reading your book. I have it pre-ordered, so I will be reading it, and we'll talk again in November.
You betcha. Thank you, and to
all
everyone
right.
else.
All right. Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Good night, everybody.